From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made over the course of more than a year. Last fall, local organizations that help survivors of domestic violence told us that they saw an increase in calls for service since the pandemic started in March of 2020, at least in our area. And leaders at Resolve of Greater Rochester shared on this program that they've seen a 40% increase in services as clients were quarantined or isolated in close quarters with abusive partners. That was in October. How has what some leaders called the pandemic within the pandemic changed since then? Forbes reported that domestic violence increased substantially during this past year. And a new report for the Council on Criminal Justice has found that, on average, domestic violence rose by an average of about 8%, both in the United States and worldwide. That data is based on people who were able to seek help. What is happening in homes where women and men, often women, but people who are victimized, what happens when they're unable to seek support at all? Abuse comes in many forms. Yes, violence, physical violence. But we are talking about a wide range of abuse. And our guest this hour will help us understand that, and will discuss how to seek support if you or someone you know is experiencing intimate partner violence or abuse of any kind. We'll also hear one woman's story of survival. I'd like to welcome our guest now. Mary Whittier is interim CEO of Resolve of Greater Rochester. Mary, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Evan. How you doing?
Good. I wish we were talking about something else, my friend.
But, I know. Me too.
But I'm glad to have you back with us, as I am glad to have Megan DeChateau of you back, President and CEO of Willow Domestic Violence Center. Megan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan. Glad to be here.
And welcome to Marie, an intimate partner abuse survivor. Marie is using a pseudonym for safety reasons, and we are grateful for your time and your story. Thank you for being with us, Marie.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be on the program today.
Let me start with Mary and Megan and what they have seen locally. So, you know, we first talked really March, April 2020, and there was a lot of worry for understandable reasons. Most of us were home more than we've ever been. People who were being victimized often felt like they had nowhere to go. And when we then talked in October, a lot of those concerns had materialized. And I do wonder if you've been able to maybe make some progress, find ways to help people who were still feeling trapped, for lack of a better word. Let me start with Mary. What has been the story of the last 14 months?
Well, Evan, we had said this before, and the statistic still holds true. We've seen about a 40% increase in our need for services. We provide a deep dive into therapy and counseling and treatment at Resolve of Greater Rochester, along with community education and training. But that is rung true. And looking at our first quarter data for 2021, we are on par, if not a little higher, this year in terms of clients coming in and seeking counseling and therapy on a more regular basis. And so that, for us, has increased. For what didn't increase for us is the actual numbers of people, and we think in part that may be an awareness issue, that sort of thing, but the intensity and the need for treatment and counseling has really remained the same at about 40% for us at Resolve of Greater Rochester.
Megan DeChateau, what have you seen at Willow?
Yeah, so at Willow, I think, you know, we know the need is high. We have seen the numbers are up. The numbers continue to be high as they were at the beginning of the pandemic. Our hotline calls, we've had over 8,000 calls this past year. There's a wait list for our shelter and our counseling services. We have, you know, over the last 40 years, and in the last year, we have not missed one day in providing services. And so our staff have been working around the clock, providing support for survivors and our entire community and whatever their need might be. So I know there's been a particular need for services given everything that's happening in the community beyond the pandemic. So the increased mental health crisis, the trauma people are experiencing being isolated, the housing crisis, the civil unrest, the police relations. I mean, it has been an intense year. And so trying to provide services for survivors in this current climate has been challenging. But you know what else? I just want to not live in the land of doom and gloom. I think it's really important to also recognize that there are some incredible people in this community and incredible agencies who are doing really good work night and day to support survivors. And that includes individuals. It's not just about the agencies. It's about the individuals who are out there supporting their neighbor or their friend or their coworker through this.
Well, can I ask both of you, you know, Mary, when you think about 40% increase in the needs for services, did the pandemic present a problem? Not to say that it was impossible or that just didn't really have an answer, but when you force people mostly indoors, mostly together, and a lot of people home from work, if they are working at all, working remotely, is this sort of a perfect storm for people who have been victimized, or have we learned sort of approaches that might reach more people if there is a similar situation in the future?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, Megan alluded to this a little bit. I think that there was a perfect storm, right? Especially with things like domestic violence, intimate partner violence, child abuse, that kind of thing, and people sheltering in place. What's interesting, too, is overall the mental health needs of not only our community, other communities, since COVID hit, has completely exploded. Some of our clients are referred by their therapists. You know, they'll go to a therapist for one issue and then realize that really intimate partner violence, there's that, and that becomes a specialist. So you don't, a lot of times, we're that specialized service, and therapists will come to us and say, geez, I've got this client. Client will call, and we'll be able to provide that. What's happening is some clients can't get to another therapist or another mental health provider that they may need for something else because it is so full. If you think about things like anxiety, depression, mental health, drug and alcohol use and abuse, suicide is up 200%. Those are all ripple effects from COVID. And, you know, while things are starting to open up a bit and you know, more and more people are getting vaccinated, that we are seeing that. I mean, for a lot of our kids aren't back in school yet. And what does that do? So I think overall, just people's well-being, their physical, emotional, and mental well-being has really, really been challenged. And you layer on top of that, you're already in a tenuous relationship with your partner, and it is really, really challenging. We, in the very beginning, did virtual, and we still do some teletherapy, but we have also opened our doors. Our staff is 100% vaccinated, fully vaccinated. Clients, whether they're vaccinated or not, can come in. While some clients may continue to choose to do telehealth or teletherapy, many of them want that personal connection and are coming back into the office for therapy. So that feels really, really good. And, you know, you'll hear from Marie in a little bit about how that makes a difference. But it has been a challenge, as Megan said, on many fronts. And we're just grateful to be here. And we do not have a waiting list. So if someone is listening and needs these services, they can call Resolve at 585-425-1580 or visit our website at resolve-roc.org. And we are here to help you.
Mm-hmm. Megan DeChateauvieux, your hotline counselors, tell me a little bit about what their work has been like. What kind of calls they're getting?
Yeah, so these staff, these advocates are on the front lines of the DV pandemic, right? The pandemic within the pandemic. And they've been answering, you know, a typical call volume for us in a regular year pre-COVID was probably, you know, between 10 to 20 calls a day, depending on the day. We have seen, you know, 45 or more calls coming in a day. And they're seeing people, you know, calling in the middle of the night, calling in during the middle of their work day, you know, taking a break from their incessant Zoom meetings and saying, I need some help, I need support right now, I need to figure this out. And so they're getting people who are calling and saying, I'm not really sure what's going on in my life. I want to talk to somebody about this. I want to figure this out. And then there are people who are calling and saying, I need shelter. I need to get out right now. I need to get out with my kids and have a safe place to stay and give myself some time to really to really adjust and figure out the next steps. And I think it's important too to note, you know, if there are, and I'm sure there are survivors who are listening to the program right now, you know, I just want to say to the survivors who may be thinking about calling the hotline or wondering about what's going on in their relationship or thinking about calling our friends at Resolve, you know, you are not alone. You're not alone. Our community stands with you. Our team here at Willow is here to support you, you know, right now, later this afternoon, tonight at 3 a.m. with whatever you need. Our advocates are on the call. We listen. We believe you. We believe in you. I think, you know, whether it's a safety plan to keep the survivor and your children safe right now, if you need a safe place to stay, or lock changes for your current home, which is wonderful to be able to keep the violence out, or if you need someone to hold your hand through the court, will you petition for that order of protection? We'll sit with you, or to find a support group. And I know Resolve has these as well, to have others who really truly understand what you're going through and can talk with you, you know, survivor to survivor, because that peer support is critical. And even if you're, you know, mom or dad who's worried about a family member or a coworker who's experiencing abuse, we're here for you too. So thinking about the many ways that the many needs there are in the community and the many ways that we have all kind of risen up to meet those needs and to branch out and figure out, even in a year that stretches us so much in so many ways, we are still strong and still standing and standing with survivors. So looking at the ways that we've expanded services, I mean, virtual, certainly, that's really an incredible opportunity and one that I hope continues beyond the pandemic, beyond the full vaccination, beyond the herd immunity, when we're out and about, because we know that transportation and childcare are still really significant barriers for people. And if we are able to provide that kind of virtual support as an option alongside in-person support, continuing beyond that, that would be incredible.
In a moment, we're going to ask Marie to tell her story. And again, I'm grateful for really for people who are willing to do that. And you know, there's never any expectation or pressure to do that. They can be very instructive and powerful stories. But before we do that, let me just ask Megan and Mary one more thing here. It was a few weeks ago that I learned of a woman that I know left recently during the pandemic with her kids, and without saying too much, given what I knew about that family, I was shocked that there was an abusive situation. I am not at all doubting the veracity, but it was a reminder to me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to like convince listeners, everyone you know could be an abuser. Like, I don't want you to see abusers in people. I don't want you to see the worst possible in people. But what I do want to say is it must be very difficult for people who are victims, especially when others don't know, or there's this image that's been preserved on the outside and everything is about to collapse and it can... I guess I'm just trying to share that you can't just assume that you can spot it and always know it and see it. Mary Witter, does that make sense?
It makes 100% sense, and that is, I think, a big reason why some people just don't come forward. They'll never believe me. We've got this beautiful home. I've got this picture-perfect family. I've got a six-figure job. I've got a career. I could never be the victim or survivor of domestic or intimate partner violence. When in reality, Evan, one in three people in their adult lifetime will experience some form of intimate partner violence. But I think people hear domestic violence or intimate partner violence and figure, well, if I'm not beaten from head to toe, if I don't have all these broken bones and end up in the emergency room, then I'm not a survivor. And that couldn't be further from the truth. The foundational, you know, emotional, mental, psychological abuse is so prevalent and so often what is underneath it. And many of our clients that actually call Resolve say, I wasn't even sure I was in an abusive relationship. So as Megan said earlier, you know, to be there to support your friends, family, neighbors, coworkers, is so important, and to believe them, because if you think mm-hmm. that this issue affects only the people in such and such neighborhood or only in such and such school or only in this particular house of worship, you are burying your head in the sand. This kind of issue happens everywhere, and folks that abuse are very narcissistic. We see that's a continual thread and theme where they turn things around and put it on the victim. They use excuses like, well, I've got a drinking problem, or I was abused as a kid, or, my dad beat my mom, so that's why I do it. Those are all, rationales, but the reality is it's an abuse of power and control, and it is in every neighborhood, school system, place of worship, community. I know many people personally before I took this job that were in these kinds of relationships, and it takes guts and courage to take that first step. So for your friend, Evan, to be able for her to leave with her kids is huge. And, of course we want to do that safely, and Willa does a great job of safety planning. We do safety planning here, but we don't have a shelter, so we are referring to Willow constantly for those kinds of services. And it's if people don't hear anything else other than call these organizations that can help you, but believe when people tell you, or if you're not quite sure about somebody, ask, be there with open arms and open eyes and open hearts.
Megan DeChateauvieux, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. It's so important for us as neighbors and friends and community members to be able to recognize abuse and to believe survivors, because we do know, to what you're saying, Evan, about your friend, abusers, people who choose to do harm, can be charming, charismatic, wonderful people who have, loads of friends who have never seen this side of them before. And that doesn't mean that what happens behind closed doors in that one relationship isn't abusive and isn't all about power and control. So we see these complicated relationship dynamics, and there's often a tendency to say, well, I think that's a great person. I can't imagine them ever doing that, and kind of turning your back on the survivor, when in fact it's so important to listen when any allegations of abuse come forward, when a friend might say, hey, things aren't going so well. Ask those follow-up questions, really kind of try to understand and say, well, I'm here for you. If you need anything, I believe you, I support you, and I'm here for you. And I think as we're thinking about survivors and, what their experience looks like, it can be easy for people who haven't experienced abuse to place blame and judgment. And I want to stop people right there as soon as they start to go down that road of thinking anything that might be judgmental or blaming the victim in any way. And one of the hardest things to understand about this, too, is that the survivor still may, in most cases, believe the abuser is a good person. The person who chooses to harm them is perhaps their partner of 15, 20, 30 years, and they have a family together and a life together, and there's all these dreams and chances that they want. And they really, that idea of love and romantic partnership continues through so many abusive relationships. And to recognize that love is still there, but they just want the abuse to stop. They want the violence to end. And so having to come to terms with that and understand that dynamic, I think is really important for people who want to be supportive friends and family and neighbors and colleagues and people who can really help a survivor through that situation, through all of the complicated emotions and healing that they need to go through to break through that trauma.
Let's talk to Marie about her story. Marie is using a pseudonym, an intimate partner abuse survivor. Marie, I want to just open it up and let you tell as full a story as you want to about yourself. Go ahead.
And along the same lines of everything that you guys just said, that's, kind of the basis for my story. I was in a marriage, and it's so easy with social media these days and to paint that picture, to make it look like you have this great life and that everything's fine. And to the point where even I had my family convinced that. And it took a really good friend of mine to start asking and really kind of, engaging in those questions to kind of pull it out of me before I even realized really what was going on. And, it had been going on for 5, almost 6 years, and a lot of it I didn't even realize. And I was I believe that Mary had said it, and it's true. Like, the conception that if you're not physically getting hurt, or if you're not, you know, mentally or verbally getting abused, that those are the only types of abuse, and mental abuse is just as damaging. And it's something that I don't think that we really, there's not enough light on it. And it was, you know, the basis of what I was experiencing. And I was very fortunate when I got out of my marriage that I worked, I had been working with a therapist back in June. And when I started explaining to her the behaviors, and, you know, it was, again, a very narcissistic relationship, very controlling, but in a way that you didn't realize that you were even being controlled. And it was, she was the one that kind of identified it as well, and she had referred me to the Willow Group, because when I started working with her, she knew that it was going to be more, that I needed more than she could provide. And at that time, I hadn't left my husband, and I didn't know what to do. And then by the time I did leave him, I ended up having to get an order of protection. And, you know, the Willow Group was there at family court, luckily, and they helped walk me through that process. And then I was very fortunate to, you know, also start working with Resolve come the winter time, and, you know, experience. And, you know, one of the things that I really took away from all this is the journey that you have to be willing to take. And it's a rough road. And, you know, I feel bad for all the survivors out there.
Marie, I'm going to just give you a moment there and just again say your story is a really important and powerful one. I think people will continue to learn from it as we have this conversation today. But, you know, it's interesting. Megan DeChateauvieux from Willow Domestic Violence Center, Mary Whittier from Resolve, these are two organizations that have been very important to Marie. But sometimes you don't know about the resources until you are in a crisis. Megan, how do you often get in touch with people? I mean, how do they often find you?
Yeah, so we also, you know, crisis support, ongoing services, and prevention. So that is key to the work that we're doing and to, you know, really addressing intimate partner violence, because we can support survivors on the one hand, you know, when they're experiencing crisis or need that trauma therapy or need that support from Willow or Resolve. But then when you seek to really make a dent in this issue, to break the cycle of violence, it's all about prevention and getting out into the community. We have a team of advocates who do prevention workshops, who do trainings in the schools. We're talking with kids from preschool. I mean, we have little ones that, you know, hands are not for hitting, how to be a good friend, really helping them understand, you know, to what Marie was sharing, the multiple different kinds of abuse from childhood that they can recognize, like how to be a good friend, name calling is not okay, how to be supportive, how to listen, right? So there are these things that really help teach children to start really young and engage them in learning what a healthy relationship looks like. So what are the things that make you a good friend? What would make you a good partner? What would make you a good spouse? You know, how does this shift the culture and change hearts and minds around this dynamic of abuse and power and control that has existed for millennia, right? So really trying to figure out how we can break this cycle. And I think it is related to prevention. So every time we're out there in the community doing a prevention workshop, our staff who are providing that training are also practitioners. They're also able to support a survivor in that moment who might disclose what's going on in their life. So that is an area for us where really when the Willow team is out there in the community, chances are in any training that we're doing, someone or multiple people will come forward and say, wow, I recognize this. I had no idea this was abuse. I didn't know what was going on in my relationship, and I need some support. Can we talk? And so our staff are out there to help provide that support, meeting survivors literally wherever they are. And another way that we're able to provide that too is, oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead, Megan.
The mobile advocate program, so thinking about meeting survivors where they are, we have advocates who can be dispatched to support you as a survivor at your workplace, at Tim Hortons, at the library. We will literally meet you masked up, and socially distanced. Mm. But wherever you might be and need that support or just need someone to talk to in the moment.
And Marie, if I could ask you just to tell a little bit more of the story of how you found resolve and maybe what that moment told you about what you were going through. Are you there, Marie? You might be on mute.
Oh, nope, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. Like I had said, I had started to work with Willow, you know, when I had going through the court system, but I, you know, at that time I had so much going on, I wasn't really ready to fully commit to therapy, and I thought that, you know, oh, I didn't know what to do at that point, and I kind of had stepped back, so it was over the summer, and then around December, I had, I'm just my massage therapist, and I started talking, and it felt right to be able to open up to somebody, and interestingly enough, she had said to me, she was like, you know, I was in a similar situation. Have you ever heard of the group Resolve? And I was like, no, I haven't. And she was like, you know, when you go home or tomorrow, look them up. And, you know, they really helped impact my life. And so I did. And the next morning, I sent an email through the website. And then, you know, my now therapist called me, and she did the initial pre-screening interview with me, and I've been working with her since December, and we joked this morning because I've still, because of the pandemic, I've never even met her other than, you know, we video, you know, I've never physically met her. So it's definitely, I wish there was more awareness of these resources because I had no idea until I was literally at the courthouse. Well, I mean, my therapist had suggested it, but even then I didn't know what it meant or what it was. And then when I actually got, you know, in the desperate situation that I was, that's when I was really able to learn about more of these resources.
Yeah. And so Mary Whittier, you know, it's interesting listening to Marie tell the story. Clearly a dam was breaking with her if she wants to open up to someone who is essentially a stranger, a massage therapist. But how fortunate that this therapist not only was a good listener, but then said, hey, and I want you to know about something that you may not have heard about. It's Resolve. And you get hooked up and off you go. And my guess is word of mouth does a lot of service in this community for an organization like Resolve. How else do people find you, Mary?
Well, you know, Marie's example is very classic. Our number one referral source are other clients, past clients. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, that's a tremendous testament to the work and how they begin that journey of healing and really go deep in terms of, geez, I am in this situation. And again, like I said before, learning, it's beyond an unhealthy relationship. This is an abusive relationship. And so we get a ton of referrals from past clients who have a friend or meet somebody in getting a massage, and also from other private therapists, and then organizations like Willow, the YWCA, that sort of thing. So because we are, you know, we are not the shelter like Megan and her program at Willow or the court advocacy. So we actually combined, we cover a lot of ground, which is great. And we do refer to each other all the time. And in fact, on our voicemail, if you can't get us after hours, we say, if you're in crisis, you know, call the Willow hotline, that sort of thing. But it is something, and Marie alluded to this, we're a specialized area, so it is, you want, a lot of times individual therapists are like, ooh, this is a little bit out of my purview. So I liken it sometimes with our clients to, if you've got something wrong with your heart, you don't go to a podiatrist, right? So you go to, so it's that specialization. And I think one thing that we obviously need to continue to do is spread the awareness about the issue and doing a lot of that prevention work that Megan talked about. And similarly, we're out doing community treatment-based training, and also do a lot of training for professionals and do workshops for professionals, but also just having that awareness that if you are in need to call, whether it's calling Willow, as Megan said, at 3:00 in the morning, and I need to get out now with my three kids, or you say, you know what, I don't need another place to live. I really need something else, and to be able to call Resolve. So, you know, it is about getting the word out, which is why we so appreciate you shining a light on this topic, Evan, because a lot of times this issue, coupled with other things like sexual assault or child abuse, people just don't want, I mean, this is not people's cocktail conversation, right? They don't like to talk about this kind of thing. But unless we do, and unless we get upstream, as Megan referenced, in terms of prevention, education, and all that, we are going to be constantly swimming upstream. So it is a culture difference. We need to be able to, you know, change attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. I mean, we see this kind of thing, right, in professional sports and in politics and in the boardroom. So it is all around us, and the zero tolerance level is what we need to get to. And, you know, we're certainly not there, but we need to continue to educate and train and also be able to provide the service when folks like Marie are ready to make that call. Because sometimes the Maries of the world, if they don't get that response or don't get that call answered the first time, it may be a long time before they call again.
Talking to Mary Whittier from Resolve, Megan DeChanteauview from Willow, and Marie is with us, who's an intimate partner abuse survivor, sharing her story. And after we take this only break of the hour, we're going to turn back to Marie's story. And we've got some questions from listeners as well that I think, you know, some thoughtful questions for our panel. As we understand abuse, domestic and intimate partner violence, and what has happened in the last 14 months as so many of us are really up close with each other. If you're someone who's been abused, it's a more dangerous situation, and we're understanding what to do about all of that on the other side of this break. I'm Evan Dawson, Wednesday on The Next Connections, our final interview in the series with candidates for Rochester City Council. We're joined by Leticia Estacio. And then we're talking about 20 minutes by bike. You've heard the phrase that you can get anywhere in Rochester 20 minutes or less by car. What about by bike? Reconnect Rochester wants you to think about all of the ways that you can do that. They're rolling out a new campaign with us on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Maria, I want to ask you a question this may be sort of a tough one to answer, but I ask it because I think there is more solidarity in the answer than maybe we would think at first. Did you struggle for a while when you sort of came to realize that your spouse was mentally abusing you, controlling you, not allowing you to see family and friends, lying about affairs, making you feel like you were the crazy one, all of these forms of control and abuse? Was it made harder because you married this person? Did you ever think, I can't believe I married this person? And did it take you some time to work through, that's not your fault? I mean, what has happened is not your fault.
Absolutely. And that was one of the hardest parts was, you know, when I started working through with therapy, is you had to have loved this person and something about this person to get that far and to get to that point in your life. And then when the light bulb essentially goes off and you realize what's going on and how hard it is, and then you don't know the next steps. And I think it was very hard for me at first too, like the amount of the mental abuse is you start to question your own reality and you don't know who's telling you the truth, what's right or wrong. And that was very difficult to then make that decision, especially I had been married less than a year, and it was, you know, it's a hard thing to realize that you had made this commitment that then you realize was, I guess I don't want to call it a mistake because I have grown so much from that, but you know, you end up in a situation that's not ideal, obviously. So it was definitely being married made it much more difficult to make those moves to be able to leave. And, you know, I was fortunate that I didn't have any children involved. And, you know, I can imagine that just the layer of complexity that adds to, you know, other survivors.
Yeah, no question about it. Let me get Leslie in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Leslie.
Hi there.
Hi, Leslie. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just had, first I'll start with a quick comment or observation. I have been in the past assisting individuals with, you know, with any form of abuse from a partner. And one of the areas that I feel, at least in our immediate community, that we haven't really tapped into in terms of awareness and are our barbers and hairstylists. I mean, if you look at the frequency in which many people, you know, get their hairs, nails, and you know, and the shave, it's, and, you know, it's quite a huge population. And I'm wondering what we can do more to educate the salon owners and individual stylists, et cetera, even as far back as going to, like, Empire and Continental, you know, Sheer Ego and all of those wonderful beauty schools. The second is more of a question. It is, what resources are currently available for the gay, lesbian, queer, trans population that are in abusive relationships, and are either Resolve or Willow supporting those individuals?
Yeah, good questions. Thank you, Leslie. Mary Whittier, you want to start from Resolve of Greater Rochester?
Sure. Well, your question's great about the hairstylist and the salons, because you're right. They're almost like mini therapists themselves. People share a whole host of things. I mean, the fact that Marie was talking to her massage therapist and disclosed, and then that's how she came to Resolve. Certainly, doing more education in those particular professions is needed, because it's like anything else. This affects so many people. If you think about it, one in three people, some form of intimate partner violence, financial, emotional, psychological, sexual, physical. Technology abuse is huge because of our smartphones. And certainly more education and training needs to be done with that population. In terms of the LGBTQ, we actually do a good amount of work in that area, and really welcome and include certainly that population. If you look at that population in and of itself, nearly half of those relationships could be categorized as intimate partner violence. And I know that Megan can share what they're doing too, but that is an area that I think for a long time just kind of got pushed aside, when the reality is this affects everyone. Everyone, gay, straight, trans, bi, black, white, brown, this is everywhere. So the inclusivity is huge. To make sure that we are an organization that welcomes all is very, very important to us. And we've done a fair amount of that work over the last year, and have actually gotten some funding to continue to do that work. So it really is, when we say it affects, you know, there's no one that it discriminates against. Let's just put it that way. That's maybe a better way of saying it. And again, for folks listening, to be able to reach out either to Resolve of Greater Rochester or Willow Domestic Violence Center, as Megan said, you are not alone. Unfortunately, there's a lot of Maries out there. And so we would just say, call us. Call us. The number for Resolve is area code 585-425-1580. Our website is resolve-roc.org.
Megan DeChateauview?
Yeah, Leslie, I'm so thankful for that question, both of your questions, actually. I think there's a really important dialogue to be had in a lot of these spaces about inclusion. And so first, I want to give a shout out to our good friend Gina Cruz. When we're talking about barbershops and hair salons, this is Gina's gift and incredible work that she's been doing to engage with the community, and particularly with barbershops, with this program that she has called Cut It Out. So she's in these spaces talking with barbers and with beauticians and hairstylists and nail salons to really support them when they're working with customers who disclose abuse, and then how do they respond? And part of the initiative there is really like to reach out to the community that's already there, already engaged, already doing this work, and just provide the supports and help kind of amplify the work they're already doing. We also do provide training. We've had a long partnership at Willow with the Empire Beauty School, with Continental, with Sheer Ego, where we go into the schools and we talk with the cosmetology students and the beauticians, and we talk with them about how to recognize the red flags of abuse in the customers that they're working with, and how to be that support, and what to do next. So we know that people come forward and say to their trusted providers, including medical, including hair salons, including, you know, their coaches, their teachers. We know people are coming forward to a safe person and saying, this is what I'm experiencing. So for us, it's really about making sure that those first points of disclosure for any survivor in any situation in our community, that those people, those teachers, those coaches, those hairstylists have the tools they need to respond. We actually refer to them at Willow. We call these folks our first responders, right? So you think about EMTs and the firefighters and law enforcement, but really the first responders to DV are those massage therapists, those hairstylists, those coaches, those teachers, and that outreach is so critically important, and to make sure that we are supporting the people who are on the front lines of supporting survivors alongside Willow. And then to the second question, thinking about the access for LGBTQ survivors, that's also a really important area for us. I don't know how many folks who are listening know about Willow's history, but it's been 6 years now. May of 2015, we actually changed our name from Alternatives for Battered Women to Willow Domestic Violence Center, because we recognize that it's not just physical abuse and it's not just women who are the victims of abuse. And that was, you know, nearly a decade ago. And since then, it's been really this intentional effort to be as inclusive and accessible to all populations, but specifically those who are more marginalized. And so thinking about LGBTQ, we have partnered with Safe Zone. Some of the former staff from Out Alliance are doing trainings in the community and really working with them to, as I said before with the hairstylist, right, it's about like amplifying and supporting and lifting the voices of folks who are already doing this work. So how do we include a message about IPV for an LGBTQ, excuse me, population? And that is really like making sure that our staff are well trained, that we all have gone through the Safe Zone training, that we're all committed to this inclusivity, and recognizing the specific unique situations of LGBTQ survivors. So knowing that we are here for you in every way. And also recognizing, as Mary said, DV impacts all demographics. And I think it's important to note that there are disparities in the survivor experience, and there are disparities in the outcomes. So we say it doesn't discriminate, but it does. And so in our community, even, we are seeing that these disparities in outcomes resulting from race, from sexuality, from identity, from gender identity, from ability or disability, friends, and then other social determinants of health. There's so many ways that these intersectionalities come into talking about intimate partner violence. And we also say that, you know, anti-violence work is inherently anti-racist and anti-oppression, because that it's all about dismantling systems of power and control. And so these inequities have to be addressed, and we're working toward that end. Well, I hear you trying to cut me off.
No, not at all, though. I know.
I have so much to say on this.
I know you and Mary are so passionate about the work. We appreciate it. Let me read an email, and I'm not going to read the name. The person who sent this email didn't ask me to withhold it, but I'm just going to let you know. This comes from a woman listening to the show who says, Evan, lest anyone think the 50s and 60s were more idyllic with women staying home, taking care of the home and kids. Domestic abuse was there, but hidden, and there were no resources. My mother didn't leave my physically and emotionally abusive father because she had no recent skills, a high school education, and 4 kids. She didn't leave, and the abuse continued for all of us. I don't blame her, but it damaged all of us. That's very difficult to read, and I'm thinking of Marie, who, you know, you mentioned, Marie, that your situation was probably alleviated somewhat by not having a child with your spouse when you decided that that's it. But at the same time, I'm sure you can still imagine the challenge of leaving for anyone and the fear in doing so. Were you fearful for your physical safety at any point, Marie?
Oh, absolutely. I was threatened. He threatened my life. He threatened his own life. And that's where then at that point, you know, my family had stepped in. He was tracking my cell phone. He, you know, my sister was very good. And, you know, we finally had reached out to the police. And that's when then I, you know, did go downtown and get the order of protection. And even with an order of protection, though, there's still that's a scary thing, too. And it's a very hard process because as a parent, and that was the thing that was so great about having the Willow group in the course, is it's not somewhere that you ever imagine you're going to be. It's not something you ever imagine that you're going to have to put an order of protection because you fear for your life against someone that you love.
And Marie, a
difficult thing.
And let me just ask you about one more aspect of this that you just mentioned, and I'll ask Megan and Mary to kind of chime in on this before the hour is up, because this goes to the subject of manipulation and control. It's also, though, boy, I can't imagine the difficulty of when someone who's been abused is told, if you leave, I will hurt myself. If you leave, I will kill myself. That has to be an enormous amount of pressure, a feeling of sort of responsibility. I am not trying to discount a suicidal ideation, but in that moment, it may be a tool of manipulation. So, Marie, what is that like for you to hear someone say something like that? I mean, how do you deal with that?
It's terrifying because part of you doesn't know, especially when you're dealing with an abusive person that, and at the time was very unstable, you don't know what's going to happen. But my recommendation for anybody out there that's in that situation, and unfortunately, because he was so manipulative, when we called the police and had the police go over to do a wellness check, he convinced them that there was nothing wrong and that I was just, you know, I made this up. When I had the recording of him on the phone when he threatened to kill himself, and I played it for we were in two different towns at the time, and I played it for the police officer that was with me at my sister's house, and then the other town's police department didn't even bring him in on a mental health arrest. So that was very, and I know things are definitely with the courts and everything harder with COVID right now, but I think that an emphasis on what really needs to happen with the legal system with some of these things and, you know, needs to be addressed as well.
Wow. Briefly, Mary, can you weigh in on that?
What's that?
Can you address the concern of manipulation that can come in that kind of a threat?
I think what Marie experienced is very, very common. The threat of I'll kill myself, I'll kill you, I'll kill our kids, I'll kill our puppy is a huge, huge tactic, whether they do it or not. Some do, some don't. But, right, it's that responsibility, the guilt, the, oh, my gosh, what am I going to, you know, how am I going to, you know, handle that if he or she, you know, goes through with it. It is. And can be, again, like you said, you don't want to minimize anyone's, level of suicidality, but oftentimes it is used as a way of, well, you won't leave me. Or how often do we see a murder-suicide situation? And I think, too, you know, oftentimes this goes back a little bit to what Marie talked about with her husband is, we hear this all the time. It's like Jekyll and Hyde. I feel like I married one person and now it's the other. Or I feel like I started dating one person and now he's another. And that's very common. And, you know, think about how hard it is for Marie and what she's going through. And then, as she said, you know, you layer on kids. The number one reason women do not leave an abusive relationship is their children. Second is financial. And so, you know, also you have to do safety planning because people can say, well, why don't you just leave? We hear that all the time, too. And it's like, it's not that easy. You know, doing a really good safety plan, you cannot believe how creative survivors get when they finally made the decision to leave. and how, and in their circle of all the planning that they have done to know themselves when it's safe to leave. It's emotionally, mentally, and physically exhausting.
And Mary, the resources for people to find you real quick, where do they find Resolve?
Yes, 585-425-1580 or resolve-roc.org.
And Megan, Willow is where?
Right, Willow Hotline 24/7. We are at 222-SAFE, 222-7233, or you can text the hotline at 348-SAFE, 348-7233. And just so people know that you do not need to be in any kind of active crisis to call the hotline number to learn about any of our services. You know, we know there are at least 25 different types of abuse, as Marie has shared with us today, too, and it's important to address those immediate needs and also the underlying trauma that survivors are experiencing. So you are not alone. Mm. You can reach out to us 24/7, 222-SAFE.
And Marie, I'm going to give you the last 30 seconds. I wish you all of the best in life. You have so much wonderful life in front of you. Are you finding yourself more hopeful as you look to your future now?
I absolutely am. And, you know, I wouldn't be where I am with the light at the end of the tunnel without the help of Resolve. And one quick thing I do want to say is, you know, the prevention and on the early end is really, I think, essential to this. And one of the other huge things for me is I was able to start building boundaries for myself. And I think that's key for any survivor.
Well, I want to thank you for being willing to share this. Look, I can't say I can imagine what you've been through. I can only say that I hope you are feeling love and respect and admiration. You're certainly helping people with the story. Thank you for sharing it, Marie.
Thank you.
Mary Whittier, CEO of Resolve of Greater Rochester. I always appreciate these conversations. They help so many people. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you, Evan.
Megan DeChateauvieux, President and CEO of Willow Domestic Violence Center. I feel the exact same way about you and the team at Willow. Thank you for doing it, Megan.
Thanks, Evan.
And from the whole team here at Connections, it's Emma Ray Stein, it's Megan Mack, Rob Braden, and me, Evan Dawson, asking you if you are a member of your public radio. This is day two of our spring membership campaign on your mobile app for WXXI or WXXINews.org. We'd love your pledge of support that says you want to make public radio strong and well guarded for many years into the future. Thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow.